Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. The storm clouds are gathering overhead, ladies and gentlemen, as we hurtle headlong towards another weekend and another month of 2021, possibly the most bizarre year in the history of this country's history. Shall we take stock of exactly where we are? Number one, the NHS has admitted that a quarter of patients classified as COVID infected are actually in hospital for other reasons and only tested positive after they got there. Great. Number two, the Foreign Secretary says workers should have had a vaccination before they returned to work, prompting a no-job, no-jab policy for companies. Number three, the government has signed a deal with a COVID passport company amid accusations of bringing in vaccine passports by stealth. France has accused Britain of having excessive quarantine restrictions and discriminate against their country. Meanwhile, they're still letting thousands of migrants illegally travel from their shores to ours in dinghies. And in perhaps the most bizarre development of all, the Department for Transport has decided to change the highway code to make it even more confusing for people. Brilliant, isn't it? 0344 499 1000. Up first this morning, it's Richard Tice, businessman, leader of the Reform UK Party. We'll get his views on the latest madness, because I tell you what, it really is crazy out there. Paul Charles also joins us with the news from the front line of the tourist business. And we've got Sean Bailey joining us as well with his view on a new parliamentary report that says the police have not done enough to stamp out racism. How surprising. 0344 499 1000. We're also joined today by Claudia Lizer, who's got a brand new show this weekend on Talk Radio. And because it's Friday, it's time for the Perrier Awards in the company of Yorkshire's finest, Izzy Rowland. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. Now, of course, on television as well. This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
And amidst the doom and gloom of the skies outside, it's time to say a very cheery good morning to Mr. Richard Tice. Richard, how are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm cheery too, despite good. The weather outside, Mike.
And despite the madness, because it really is crazy today, the news.
It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? It's getting madder and madder. What sort of world do we live in where all of a sudden the government, without any form of debate, and having spent months at the beginning of the year, various cabinet ministers of great repute, like Michael Gove, like Nadeem Zahawi, saying we weren't going to have vaccine passports. Actually, not only are they going to be brought in, but we're selfish now, yes. Apparently, if we don't take the vaccine. I mean, I've been double jabbed, but we're selfish. And they're looking to, in a sense, continue the persecution of the young.
Yes.
So,
and they're also telling you that despite the fact you have been double jabbed, that doesn't actually help you in any way whatsoever, because you still can't go anywhere and you still can't do anything.
Yeah, there's that as well. But I wonder what it is this government and the Conservative Party have against children and young people. Mm. The idea that if you want to go and dance in a nightclub, that you've got to have a vaccine passport. The idea that if you want to go to university and, heaven forbid, attend a lecture,
yes.
I mean, I know students quite often don't attend lectures, but if you want to attend a lecture, then you've got to have a vaccine passport. If you want to actually live in a halls of residence, I'm not sure whether they're going to have tents lined up on the pavement outside or whatever, but if you want to be a student in a halls of residence, you've got to have the vaccination and a vaccine passport.
And what do you think is this obsession of theirs now? Because it really is an obsession. With people getting vaccinated.
Well, it's actually what it is blackmail and coercion through the back door by making it effectively impossible to lead a normal, traditional life as a young person unless you've also been vaccinated. Look, We all know the vaccine is the way out of this crisis.
Well, that's what they keep telling us. But we've all now been vaccinated practically. I mean, nearly the whole country has been vaccinated in one way, shape or form. And yet, we're still not able to go to France without coming back and quarantining. We're still not able to go to events without showing some kind of pass or other.
So what it shows us is that we have to learn, which I've been saying for months, you have to learn to live with this thing in the same way that we live with flu, in the same way that, sadly, we live with, you know, difficult diseases like cancer.
All manner of diseases that you can catch.
You have to live with it. But, you know, once you start coercing people to take a medicine, you know, then actually you're into a whole different place and where essentially the state becomes all powerful. Whereas actually, you know, it is one's own body and one should have freedom of choice to do with what you want to with your body, whether you're going to put an ear piercing in or whether, you know, it's your body. And I think it's deeply discriminatory.
Well, it is. And it's also a very slippery slope. I mean, Laura Dodsworth was in here the other day saying exactly this, that this is a very, very important time in our history, because if we let them do this, what are they going to do next?
Well, it's a very slippery slope. It's the thin end of a massive, massive wedge. It's very divisive. And where does it stop? So you had Julia earlier this morning had a Labour MP talk about, well, you know, vaccine passports were there, Labour's against them except for large gatherings. Well, he didn't know what a large gathering was.
So
that was pretty unhelpful.
Yeah.
But is it going to the cinema with 50 other people? Is it 10,000 people in a sports stadium?
Is it going into a restaurant that has more than 10 tables?
Yeah. You know where it's going. And then the other thing to remember, of course, is that no one actually knows how long the vaccines are going to be effective for. Mm. At what point do they actually become a bit less effective?
Yes.
Do the effects wear off, in inverted commas? And, you know, I had a conversation last week with Nadeem Sahawi, who started talking about the booster program would start.
And I hear that word quite a lot now.
Yeah, so, again, there's been no debate or discussion about, well, how long the vaccines last and who's going to get boosted. And you can see this. Mm. It's this thin end of the wedge that before we know it, it's a bit like repainting the fourth bridge, isn't
yes.
it? We vaccinated everybody.
Back to the beginning.
And guess what, folks? Back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And I always say follow the money. Mm. And who makes the money here, Mike?
Mm.
If we're back to the beginning and we're having to reboost everybody who's previously been vaccinated, you know who makes the money? It's the vaccine companies, Big Pharma.
Right.
And
you retweeted a very interesting piece from the Mail today about a £100 million fine that's been given out for drug pricing sort of rules being broken.
Yeah, we've got to be very careful about Big Pharma. And, you know, I've been very critical about the government and quangos, but credit where credit is due. There's a government quango that most of your splendid listeners quite sensibly would never have heard of, called the Competition and Markets Authority.
Mm.
They've actually been brilliant at spotting predatory drug pricing by some of the big pharma companies who are owned by some big private equity groups, including one called Cinven, which used to be part of the Coalbord Pension Fund.
Yeah.
And the Competition and Markets Authority have fined this drugs company and Cinven £100 million because they were basically forcing up the price of drugs to the NHS 6,000% over give or take a decade. And then get this, the most despicable, the most immoral thing that they did was actually they were being paid by another drugs company not to sell drugs to the NHS, because therefore the first drugs company could charge a higher price because there was no competition. So they were literally being paid in order to boost the profits of another company, charging the taxpayer through the NHS even more money.
I think that should be an offence more than just a fine.
Well, I think it is, and actually, I'm not going to let this lie down. I'm going to actually write to Kwasi Kwarteng to see whether or not the directors should be disqualified as being directors or suspended. I'm going to write to the Financial Conduct Authority to see whether or not actually Cinven, a private equity group, should be authorised and regulated.
Mm.
Because I think this is such immoral, such despicable behaviour.
Well, it's taxpayers' money they're basically ripping off.
It's taxpayers' money they're trying to rip off.
Yeah.
And look, I'm in favour of the private sector and free markets, but there has to be a line of moral responsibility.
Mm.
Because
if you're watching, by the way, on TV, the tweet has just gone up. So the headline from Alex Brummer's commentary piece, not just venal, but immoral and a betrayal of patience. And that's entirely correct.
And it's a fantastic piece. Yeah. I urge everybody to read it in this morning's Daily Mail. But no, you know, people have. We have to set examples where people, frankly, when they take the Mickey and when they rip off taxpayers, that is crossing the line.
Yes.
Particularly when it's involved with the NHS and people's health.
Because that'll be the next thing. If this vaccination lark becomes something which the government suggests we do on a regular basis, then the price will go up immediately, won't it? Because these companies have only been sort of nice to us, if you like, because they knew there was going to be such a mass rollout that
exactly.
they'd make a fortune.
Exactly. And this is the thing. And this is the thin end of the wedge and the rollout of the booster programme. And, you know, yes, AstraZeneca are doing their vaccine at cost, which is fantastic, during the crisis, but at some point
it won't stay like that. No,
and so it all changes.
Mm.
And you know, you look at, for example, Moderna. Their share prices, not surprisingly, soared over the last 18 months. So you know, follow the money. Think about this very, very carefully. And you know, there needs to be a proper democratic debate and discussion across the nation, so everybody understands what's
and
going on.
And my bet is as well, if there is a booster plan for the autumn, a lot of people will just say no thanks. Because I think people have been misled. They've been, they feel like they've been led astray. They feel as though they were promised something and then not given it. So they'll go, really? Why should I get a booster? Maybe I won't bother.
Correct, because we were promised that there would be freedom.
Yeah.
You know, we all remember Matt Hancock. Remember him?
Yes.
The bloke who said, once we're sadly.
Do you know, I was in a restaurant yesterday, and the guy who owns the restaurant said to me, you know, there's only one person, if he ever came to my restaurant, that I would refuse to serve, and it's Matt Hancock.
Well, there
any
you
other,
are.
He said, even if Boris came, he said he could come and sit down. But
really?
If Matt Hancock came here, I
think
chase him down the street.
I think he's being generous.
Yeah.
But you know, seriously, you know, the ministers, they said, cry freedom when the over 70s and the vulnerable vaccinated.
Yeah.
Then it was over 50s. Mm. Then it was all adults.
Right.
You know, it never ends.
Well, I saw a mail on Sunday, page one from December, that somebody sent me. And it said 15 million jabs to freedom, right? We've had about 50. Million.
50 plus,
yeah,
and counting.
Exactly. And it was meant to all be over by the end of February.
And I think you're right. I think that confidence is slipping in this process. And so if they, you know, when they do this booster program, I think the take up will be much, much less.
Mm.
And I think people will be really, really cautious. And look, we've seen the reality is that, yes, the great news is vaccines mercifully reduce the severity of those that suffer badly with COVID. Reduces hospitalizations and deaths. But we know it doesn't stop transmission.
Mm.
We know it doesn't stop you being infected with it. So you then say, well, hang on. So, yes, take it to reduce the risk, but it's not the total answer.
No.
So why do we need vaccine passports?
Yeah, but also what we know now about the hospitalisation figures is that a quarter of them, we believe, according to a report in the Telegraph this morning, are people who went into hospital for a different reason, were tested positive for COVID and then counted. Now, that doesn't mean a lot now, but as one of Julia's guests said this morning, that means back in January, when there was like 34,000 people in hospital, more than 8,000, possibly 9,000 of them were in for something completely different.
But the truth is that many of us knew that back then. But we weren't allowed to talk about it. The NHS, I think they knew that data back then, but I think they were terrified about releasing it.
Well, the one
and
place
the suppression
you know.
of vitally important information, you know, I think is one of the horrors of this crisis.
Absolutely, and also one of the horrors, one of the most positive places to get COVID was hospital. You know, forget about restaurants and bars and nightclubs and football matches and tennis matches. You know, it was hospitals.
Yeah, no, I think actually that figure of 25% in many cases may well be an underestimate because we heard this time and time again where people went into hospital for a completely unrelated treatment or illness or, you know, leg breaking or whatever and ended up with a positive test. So, yeah, you know, this is... the thing is... Follow the data. The Prime Minister kept saying it's data, not dates. Well, that's why we need the data.
Yeah.
We need to know the data, for example, Mike. What's the average age of all these cases at the moment?
Right.
Actually, if it's, and I think it is anecdotally, young people, in a sense, that actually should give reassurance to the population that it's the young getting. We know that the young don't suffer from this virus anything like as badly. They might get a sniffle, they might get flu. And as doctors say to me, it's actually better for young people to get the natural antibodies than to be essentially coerced into having manufactured antibodies. So, you know, I do think that the data is really, really important. And the government, there's so much more that they could give confidence to the nation by releasing more data and give more self-belief. But instead, they do it very selectively, in a sense, to perpetuate that state of fear that Laura Dodsworth talked about.
And wouldn't it be good if we had opportunities to ask the government questions, because then we could have press briefings. But of course, the people that go to those press briefings don't ask the right questions, unfortunately. Richard, stay with us for a moment. We're with Richard Tice, head of the Reform UK party.
This is Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB+, and on the Talk Radio app. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio, which is now, of course, available on television. All you've got to do is go to the App Store, get Talk Radio TV, or look at talkradio.tv. Richard Tice is with me now. Now, if I read this to you as a relatively intelligent individual, you could, I'm sure, tell me what it means. Routes must join together. Isolated stretches of good provision are of little value. I mean, it's like a jumbled up number of words, all just put them in any order.
You'll have to keep going.
Purely cosmetic alterations should be avoided. I'm not just talking about my makeup.
I was about to say.
How about this one? Cyclists must be separated from volume traffic, both at junctions and on the stretches of road between them.
And do they refer to the new e-scooter users as well?
There's no mention of e-scooters, funnily enough. But what I can tell you is that the new highway code has been changed to make it more friendly to pedestrians and cyclists. So basically, if you drive a car, you're now so far down the pecking order of road users that they're not interested in anything you want to tell them. And it now says that you may not be employed by the government to design any kind of road system unless you're a cyclist.
Good heavens. Well, I am a cyclist, but what I will say is that you probably shouldn't employ me to write the highway code, because I will admit on air that it did take me not one, not two, not three, but four times to pass the driving test. So I'm probably not the person to talk to.
My father, who came out of the RAF after the Second World War, decided to learn how to drive, went for one test and failed, and then refused to drive again. Just said, that's it for me.
What, he bought himself a chauffeur?
So no, my mother was the chauffeur. We used to drive all over Europe in Austin, Cambridge, without seatbelts, all the way through France, Italy. We used to go camping in Venice, Lido di Jesolo, and he never drove.
Well, I mean, lucky him. But what's wrong with the existing highway code? I mean, it seems to work. What's the problem?
Well, what they've now done, right, is they've made it possible for people to believe that as pedestrians, they have the right of way over cars. Now, this is going to create carnage, because what they're going to do is they're going to walk out in front of you when you're driving, expecting you to stop.
So that's actually going to be far more dangerous, and more pedestrians will therefore be injured,
of course,
or tragically even killed, as opposed to relying on a zebra crossing, which is where pedestrians should cross.
Right. And they talk about not having confusing sort of... here's another one. Routes must feel direct, logical, and be intuitively understandable by all road users. They've clearly never driven across Blackfriars Bridge. So I don't know if you've seen that, but I mean, there's so many lights on it when you're there at night that you literally start having sort of an attack of the vapours.
And whether it's in cities or in the countryside, you know, the place is just so littered with signposts and signage that you actually end up just switching off looking at all this stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, the local authorities spend an absolute fortune putting all this signage up, and then people give up reading it. It's just too much. And if you kept reading the signage, you wouldn't be concentrating on the road and you'd be more likely to have an accident.
I mean, we talk about cyclists all the time, and I've got no problem with people cycling at all. But the way that they've really deconstructed the road system in London in particular and put these cycle lanes in going one way, and then they switch across the road and go the other way, and nobody knows where they're going. And there are now parts of London where you can't turn left to go to a road that you live in because there's a cycle lane between you and the next road, and you're not allowed to cross it. So how the hell are you supposed to get home?
I mean, it's complete madness. It really is. And it's just confusing everybody. I mean, you know, essentially you're going to need a degree fairly soon in order to be able to understand the highway code, in order to be able to understand how to drive through across roads that are sort of completely crisscrossed with walking lanes, with e-scooter lanes. I mean, where does this end?
Well, there have been several occasions, I would say, over the past year where I've been in, say, a part of London that I don't normally drive in, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do, because there's a light traffic light there, and then there's a filter light there, and if I'm going straight on, I need to be in that lane there, and you're so confused that, you know, you kind of go, I've no idea, well, you just want to get out of the car and walk, which is exactly what they want you to
do. Which, of course, is what they want you to
do. They're trying to make it impossible to drive.
It's another form of coercion.
It is.
It's a bit like the vaccine and vaccine passports.
Yeah.
It's the government continuing to coerce people.
Yeah, we can't actually make you sell your car. We'll just make you not ever want to use it.
We'll make it impossible to use. And that's what they're doing. So you're going to end up sort of walking everywhere and then being confused as to
getting
run over by a cyclist
or an e-scooter.
It's just, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, the current system does seem to work pretty well.
Now, I'll tell you what I haven't worked out yet, and maybe we can practice this later on this afternoon. What happens if you step out in front of a cyclist? Do they have to stop?
Well, there you are.
Yeah? Now we're talking.
Now we're talking.
Let's get one of those signs like the one from the Tour de France.
Yeah.
And just take it all down.
And who's insured? Because, of course, cyclists are not insured.
Of course not.
So you get into a whole new battleground.
I mean, as if life wasn't confusing enough.
It is way too confusing.
And that's before you've been at the pub. And then, God's sake.
Where do we go with this?
I don't know.
It's impossible, and it's only Friday.
Well, listen, have a great weekend. God knows what next week is going to bring. I mean, it literally seems to be getting crazier and crazier instead of more sensible.
At some point, and maybe because it's August and people hopefully are going on holiday, staycationing, going around the corner, whatever, but maybe some sanity will start and some calm will start to settle as the politicians leave the madhouse of Westminster.
Well, do you know, I'm looking forward to the first one that gets caught going abroad somewhere. I bet none of them are, because they'll all be going all
bit. Oh, I wouldn't believe
there's
that.
There's bound to be somebody.
There'll be loads of them. They're very good at saying one thing and doing completely the opposite.
Mm.
So, no, generally, actually, the country seems to run itself without politicians through August quite well. You know, that's my recollection of August.
No, I think you're absolutely right. That's something to look forward to. See, Richard Tice always cheers me up when he comes in here, even if he brings champagne or not. He only brought it once. I rather wish he'd brought it today. Anyway, we'll see you soon.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Right now, though, let's talk, of course, to our next guest, Paul Charles, Chief Executive of the PC Agency, travel consultancy firm, because the French have basically kicked off. They're saying us that the British quarantine rules and the Amber Plus levy is far too cautious, far too ridiculous and far too discriminatory. But we'll also find out whether or not he's going to be telling us what is likely to be happening in the next few days, in the next week, because that's when the new rules are going to come out about new countries possibly being made greener or more amber or more red. Paul, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed. We're still kind of struggling here, aren't we, a bit? You know, we're sort of one step forward, two steps back at the moment, it seems, with the travel business. We've had Americans being told they can come here, but a lot of them are not sure because the CDC still tells them not to travel to Britain. People from Europe can now come here. I was in a taxi yesterday driving through central London. It looked as though there were more tourists around than I've seen for a while.
Yes, and my office is in Regent Street, and it was very, very busy, I must say, compared with how it looked for most of 2020.
Yes.
Definitely flight bookings are picking up. There are more tourists and business visitors coming into the UK already, even ahead of Monday's change in government policy. But it is going to be bumpy. We've known for some time it's going to be a lumpy, bumpy summer for travelling, and this is why if you are going abroad, you need to really do your research and find out what the restrictions are, both going into the country you're going to, but also, of course, coming back based on whether that country is green, red or amber.
But, of course, the difficulty with doing your research, Paul, is that you do your research, you book your holiday and then everything changes.
Yes, that's a good point.
So you know, you can only do so much research without being able to have a crystal ball.
It's true. And also, I think the Transport Secretary was being a little bit naive in some of his interviews this morning. Surely not a minister being naive. But yes, when he basically said that it was dangerous to have speculation about countries going on green, amber or red. I mean, the problem is the government's created a traffic light system which has caused confusion, which has led to people being very confused and also led to people having to change their bookings at great cost. So the government's own policy has actually brought about great financial distress for a lot of people who've booked in good faith, like a Portugal holiday recently, for example, when it was green. Then the government moved it to amber at short notice and they had to fly back from Portugal.
Right.
So I'm afraid this traffic light system is completely lacking in credibility in the way the government have introduced it. And it's not how it should have been done.
And also, it doesn't seem to have any great rhyme or reason to it. I mean, the French, quite rightly, are being very critical of the quarantining and the sort of Amber Plus status that they were given. Because, in fact, the argument now seems to centre around an island very far away from France, which apparently Britain took, Reunion Island, I think it's called, took notice of because they've got a very high COVID rate and it's technically a French territory. So the French mainland actually has fewer cases than we have.
It does. I mean, the variants have been going up a little bit in mainland France, but there's still no reason to put it onto this Amber Plus list, which was created out of panic, of course, late on a Friday night recently by ministers that didn't even include the transport secretary who's responsible for this traffic light system. He wasn't at the meeting. So the ministers are all over the place, frankly, in the way that they're treating the travel sector and this traffic light system.
Yeah.
And it's got to change. If you look at America as an example, they let their fully jabbed citizens travel to most countries in the world, and all they have to do is take a pre-departure test in the country they're in before they fly back to the US.
Right.
They're then recommended to take a test on day three when they get back to the US, but they don't have to. The rules are much simpler, and that's why the American economy is firing at great guns compared with our travel economy, which is still sluggish.
A lot of people are asking the question, though, why are the US not reciprocating with their travel entry system, and they're not still allowing us to get on a plane to go to New York?
It's a good question. Good question. So put yourself in Joe Biden's shoes.
I'd rather not.
He's got an economy, pretty big shoe.
Trips up the stairs.
He's got an economy that is growing really fast at 7-8%. He's got no pressure from the US airlines because their domestic flights are pretty full and they're returning to profitability. So they're really happy. And of course, he's seen Delta variant increase and infections increase. He still wants to improve his vaccine rollout. So there's no immediate pressure on him to open those borders to Europeans or to the UK. And I don't see that really opening much before September. Mm. So I'm afraid August is a bit of a washout in terms of anyone wanting to go to the US. Although, of course, there are more British people who are laundering their status in other countries.
Yes.
So, for example, they're going to a Caribbean island. If they can afford it, they're spending 2 weeks there. Then they're going into the US because they won't have been in the UK in the previous 14 days.
Yes. Well, I was looking at doing that myself because you can go to Mexico and do it for 2 weeks. But it just, unfortunately, it's a very expensive way of going to see my mother in America. And it also means I would have to take off about 3 or 4 weeks from work because I'd then have to quarantine again when I got back, probably. So it's all a bit tricky. So what are you expecting next week, Paul? Because I know it's difficult to predict what's likely to happen, but from the noises coming out of Grant Shapps this morning as he was doing his various interviews, it doesn't sound as though much is going to change for the better.
Well, I mean, we've got another week to go and a lot can change, as you know. I mean, in Spain, the cases actually are declining. They're flatlining and declining. So I'd be very surprised if Spain is added to this Amber Plus category. I think France will come off the Amber Plus category due to the diplomatic concerns that are going on. And the Amber Plus category itself, I think, may be moved to the back shelf and changed and quietly forgotten about. But you will see some greens because there are declining cases in various countries. Poland's a good example. Italy is a good example where actually they should go green. I think you may see some reds move to amber as the government relaxes a little bit, especially the Middle East, where there's a great deal of concern that Dubai, Doha, Abu Dhabi have not opened up.
Right.
So I think they might be moved to amber, but with some conditions, such as if you transit through, you'll still be in red. But if you come direct from those places, you'll be in amber. And then let's see what happens with Greece, very much under the spotlight at the moment with cases rising in the Greek islands. But we may just see a strengthening of the amber and advice not to travel unless you really need to.
Yeah.
But it's tough during August because clearly what's happening is that cases are rising as more people are mixing. But increasing cases doesn't mean increasing hospitalizations, of course.
No, of course it doesn't. And I mean, Grant Shapps actually told one interview this morning that one out of three people who are sent home to self-isolate has later caught COVID. And as people have pointed out, well, how would he know that? He can't possibly know that. So he's basically now making stuff up on the hoof.
Well, I'm afraid I don't believe most of the figures coming out of government. They issue figures that suit their argument on that particular day. But when put under the microscope, they're simply not relevant or they're out of date. And actually, a lot of test and trace data coming out of the NHS is showing that there are no variants coming in from amber or green countries in positive tests. So I, as always, the fear factor is ratcheted up or down, depending on the government policy that week.
Yes, exactly right. And one of the questions I get asked quite a lot at the moment, Paul, is with regard to places like Italy, where we understand they've got a sort of vaccine passport system for going into restaurants and bars and that kind of thing. What happens if you go there as a tourist from here? You know, what do you get asked to provide?
It's a good question, Mike, because actually last night Italy confirmed they're extending the 5-day quarantine on UK visitors.
Oh, really?
So sadly, from it was due to run out today,
yeah,
and extended it until August the 30th. So anyone...
Oh, so even if they go green, you've got to quarantine there anyway.
Absolutely. So if you had a villa booked maybe, which a lot of people do in August for Italy, especially government ministers who like to go to Chianti Shire,
yes,
as it's called, Tuscany, they would have to quarantine for 5 days. Mm. So a lot of people don't want to do that. And I think Italy may lose market share. But in terms of the point about the passports, the domestic passport, this isn't just Italy, but also France and Portugal is about to introduce this, where you will have to show and prove that you've been fully jabbed to get into certain places like restaurants, bars, hotels, etc. So I think what's becoming clear is that across Europe, that vaccine passport is becoming more common and prominent. Mm. Therefore, it's an incentive for anyone in the UK to get fully jabbed if they want access to places abroad.
Well, it's not really much fun if you go on holiday and you can't actually go anywhere. And all you can, you can't even, I mean, in some cases, not even into a supermarket, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty strict rules that are coming in now. But what we need is consistency. I don't think anyone's got too many issues with some of the rules, as long as they're consistent and they're the same across Europe or across the UK. We need governments to be working much more closely together to create a seamless process. Otherwise, we're putting up with these ups and downs, in-outs, off-on rules for another year.
And it's exhausting. It's just frankly exhausting. I mean, every time anybody mentions holidays to me now, I just kind of go, no, please, enough already. I can't even think about it anymore.
Well, Paul, that's why the UK is doing so well and staycations are booming. And obviously our economy here is good, but we still need inbound visitors and we still need access to go out overseas.
Well, you say we're doing well, but some of us are being driven insane, you know, because we can't go anywhere. But anyway, Paul, thanks very much indeed. Paul Charles, Chief Executive of the PC Agency travel consultancy firm. It's not great news, is it? As ever, we are still in this kind of limbo situation where you can't really go anywhere. And if you can go anywhere, you can't do much when you get there. And in some cases, you can't do anything when you get there. I mean, when's it going to end? When is it going to end?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It's time to welcome Sean Bailey. I don't think I've ever had you in the studio on my show. Maybe once before, I think, in the old studio downstairs.
I think that's correct.
Now you're joining the team, so that's great news. Welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming in today to talk to us. Tell us what you're doing next week.
So I'll be doing the early morning breakfast show, so you'll hear the immortal words. It's early breakfast with me, Sean Bailey. I'm looking forward to it, so let's see how it goes.
And you get to do a handover with Julie Hartley Brewer, which is always exciting.
It's always great to see Julia, so let's see how that goes as
I'm sure it'll be brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Now, a couple of things to talk to you about. Let's kick it off first off, because we've got a few calls coming in on it, on this highway code business, right? Because London and the streets of London are very congested. I mean, I was in a cab yesterday, and I was very happy to see, as we sort of meandered our way through Westminster, a lot more tourists around. It seems like London's getting a bit busier. A lot more people in the parks, in Green Park, St James's Park. But sometimes trying to navigate the roads in this city now, because of your good mate Sadiq Khan, it's a nightmare. You know, there's a bus lane over here, there's a cycle lane over there, there's a traffic light for them, but not for you. I mean, it's like you've got to have a degree in mathematics to get across town.
You're completely right. I think, actually, if you want to make the road safer, we need to look again at the layout of the road. I think that's the single most important thing. And when you look at this proposal from Grant, What's confused me, I thought it already was the way. I thought if you were in a car, it was on you to look out for cyclists.
Yes.
And for me, that's how I drive. Mm. I spend all my time making sure I don't hit cyclists or pedestrians, because obviously the harm caused. I think that the little room that we need to look at, if we're going to make changes to the highway code, is two important things. Firstly, most pedestrians will never read that document.
No.
They won't. So we need to figure out how do they get the information. Mm. And secondly, we must make sure that we don't cause a conflict in that document, and a change in the rules must be handled very subtly.
Yes, because I think there's actually quite a lot of education that you could be giving people, maybe in schools, maybe you teach kids in school actually what the rules of the road are. Because, I mean, I see quite often now, for example, when you come up to a roundabout or a junction, and the people are sitting there without knowing who's got the right of way. And they sit there, and they sit there for so long that in the end you just go. And look, you guys should be going before
me. But that's about it's two things. Let's talk about school first. So I'm of the correct vintage to remember the Green Cross Code, and we got taught to cross the road in school. Because, of course, most people get wounded on the road, actually teenagers, after school.
Right.
So actually it's probably more important than we might think.
Yeah.
When it comes to people's right of way at roundabouts, it's slightly confusing. Mm. It needs to be taught properly in the driving test. The driving test now, I think, is better than it's ever been.
Is it? Yeah.
But maybe
it's quite a theoretical test now, as well, isn't it?
Which I think is useful. I mean, I passed my test ages ago when they used to open the book. What's this? What's that? Right. Where you go? But now you have to do the video test and all the rest of that.
Right.
I think, again, if you want to improve safety on the streets, that's probably where you should start. Yeah. Are people getting information? Is the test the correct test?
Yes. But also, if you consider what it was like, I mean, I'm a little bit older than you. When I used to go to school, you know, I used to take the tube and then a bus sometimes. And that was about it. You had taxis, you had cars, you had vans. Now, you've got pedestrians, you've got skateboarders, you've got people on those weird things with one wheel, you know, that go down the road and it looks, you know, there's guys on Segways, there's people on e-scooters, there's bikes, there's electric bikes. I mean, there's all manner of different forms of transport going on. I mean, I've seen some of these new bikes, you know, with the long boxes for delivering stuff and people on penny farthings. I mean, it's like a circus out there. Do you know what I mean?
But that actually is why Grant Shapps is in the right. He's basically saying, look, the world looks very different now, and I'm going to try to change the rules to respond to that. And there's some sense in that. But I still go back to the personal thing. If you're a pedestrian, it really doesn't matter what it says in the highway code. What really matters is physics.
Mm.
If you step out in front of a car, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things we could do as a nation, not just when it comes to crossing the road, but in everything, dealing with COVID jabs, our own children, whatever it is take a little bit more personal responsibility. Mm. That is normally the thing that keeps you safest of all.
Yeah. Now let's talk a bit about the cabinet and Grant Shapps, because, you know, all over the papers this week has been this vaccine passport story. A lot of people who are what I would call traditional conservatives have said to me, you know, what is going on with the Conservative Party? They're doing things which aren't very conservative. Boris Johnson seems to have one agenda, and it's all about being green, and that's part of this whole kind of transport thing with the highway code. You know, the only thing he really seems to have bought into is this idea that he wants to make everybody use less energy, you know, be more kind of green in what they do. We had Allegra Stratton the other day telling you to wash, you know, stop washing your plates before you put them in the dishwasher. You know, what is going on inside the Conservative Party? Are they becoming less conservative?
I'd say two things. You can separate these things out. So the green agenda, I think they're correct. Let's be clear. There's a great future for us in that, all the technologies. There's a way that we have to run our country, so we want to add to the global warming. So I think they're correct about that. When you talk about not being conservative, I think actually this government has done a fairly good job in responding to the pandemic. It has been unprecedented. And here's the thing I say to everyone. If you don't want to take a vaccine or wear a mask, that's fine. But remember, we have a country with a national health service. So if you're ill, we all have to cover the bill, which I believe gives the government the right to say, actually, play ball, because you won't be sick on your own. You'll make somebody else sick. And also, we'll have to pay that bill.
But when it comes to COVID, that's not always true, is it? Because just because you don't wear a mask doesn't mean you're going to get sick. Just because you don't have a vaccine doesn't mean you're going to get sick.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
also...
But you might get sick anyway.
Yeah, but if you're in a government, you can't... There's 67 million. Of us here, you have to make a rule that kind of works for everyone. That's how our democracy works. And the point is, like for me, for instance, I'm very low risk when it comes to COVID,
right.
But I could make someone ill who is very high risk.
Yes.
And the NHS would have to deal with both of us. So the government has to take all of that into account.
But at the beginning, the word was that we protect those vulnerable people that you don't want to make ill, for example, if it's your grandmother or your grandfather or an elderly relative of one kind or another. And so they could protect them. But now they've kind of extended that to everyone. Now, I'm very happy to protect the vulnerable because I think that's a good thing to do. And it's a very sort of noble thing to do. You don't want to deliberately make people ill. But equally, people have got freedom and people have got rights which have been taken off them. And they need them back. And I think you have to balance those two things, don't you?
You're completely right. It is about balance. And the problem is... Will I make someone ill? Have I? You can't know that. And the government has to make a big sweeping plan for everyone. And let's be clear, they've got some things right, some things with the benefit of hindsight you would have tweaked. But I'm not worried about our freedoms because we have a democracy. If we truly believe our freedoms are under attack, we have something we can do about that. And I still believe at the core of the Conservatives is Conservatives, because remember, all the way along, the government's had to fight who? Conservative MPs. Mm. There is still that voice in there saying, actually, a free nation, the way that Britain looks, is this way, and that voice is still there.
But there's a lot of Tory backbenchers who are going to vote against COVID passports if they want to bring them in, though. And so, you know, it's not a universal belief across the entire party.
You make my point for me.
I mean, if only we knew what the Labour Party thought, you know, we might be able to say, well, actually, COVID passport's probably not going to happen because Labour's going to vote against them. But that was last week, because Keir Starmer said last week they weren't going to vote for them. This week he's saying they might.
But that shows the bigger problem, doesn't it? The Labour Party have been on attack. That's their job. We all get it. But they've had no coherent attack. And all they've ever done, really, is go the opposite way from the government, which is added to the confusion. So I've often thought it's a cheek that they say the public's confused when they are the major group of people.
Well, it's worse than that, isn't it? Because they sort of agree with the government, but then they kind of don't like the way they've done it. And they go, yeah, but we would have done the same thing. And you go, so you agree then? Well, no. Because we would have done it differently.
But this, I think, we'll look back on this period of time and we'll say, yeah, there's lots of things we could have done differently. But I think the Labour Party will have to have a long, hard look at who they are. Because to be in opposition is important to the country. You need a good opposition to move the country forward, but you don't need a belligerent opposition. You know, and to keep making the same point as the government, but say you're not agreeing, they're taking the public for fools. We're not idiots. We can see what's going on.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, my fear is that Sadiq Khan, who obviously has ambitions in that direction, wants to be the next leader of the Labour Party. And in fact, he was polling higher recently than old Keir Starmer was. And he and Andy Burnham seem to be the suitable front runners as to who would take over next. Do you think that could happen?
I think it's a great possibility. I mean, let's be clear. I remember I had a hand in the last mayoral election.
You came very close, by the way.
I was present.
I got a call. I couldn't believe it, right? The day of the count, I got a call from somebody who was down at the count, down in Stratford, I think it was, or Canary Wharf or somewhere, saying, Sean Bailey's in the lead. I went, what? I was in the pub. I was like, blimey. You know, I was like, we send somebody down there straight away.
That's all ancient history. We know what happened there. But a friend of mine, who's one of the best political analysts in the country, said to me, the person in the universe happiest about your outcome will be Andy Burnham. Because it shows everybody that Sadiq Khan isn't the golden boy anymore. Yeah. He's no longer Teflon. And it shows that actually the public are starting to have a harsher look at him. So I think that the both of them are in the running, but I'd argue that Andy Burnham is quite a way ahead because, quite frankly, he's a nicer guy.
Well, also very vulnerable, I would say, Sadiq Khan at the moment on a couple of things. One, the way the police are operating in the city, because even though not everybody knows it, he's got quite a big hand in how the police operates in London, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's a police and crime commissioner for London. He has significantly more than a big hand. He has the moral duty, the statutory duty, and the money. He's budgetary control. So, yes, he has a big thing. Look, I would argue that the police in London have tried their best and they continue to get better, but their problem has always been Sadiq Khan because he's never provided leadership. At any opportunity he can throw them under the bus, he will. And of course the Labour MPs, the Dawn Butlers of his world, have done everything they can to attack the police force and service, excuse me. And what that's done, it's made the streets of London more dangerous than they've ever been.
Yeah, absolutely right. Now, a piece of The Guardian this morning about a report by the Home Affairs Committee, which I wanted to raise with you. I don't know if you had a chance to see the actual report, but according to this piece, it says the police and governments, in plural that is, have done too little to stamp out racial injustice in the ranks of the police force, with the failings, they're calling the failings systemic. I don't think they're saying it's, you know, it's racist, racially systemically problematic, but what do you make of this?
Look, this report is by the Home Affairs Committee, very hard-hitting report, very big committee, and they use words like, you know, continued persistent disparity, you know, that can't be justified. And there is some room that they are correct, just be clear. But there's two things I'd say. Firstly, if you look over the 22-year period plus since the McPherson report, the police hadn't done enough. But in the last 4 or 5 years, they've really increased the pace. And I think as press, politicians and public, we need to keep the pressure on them to continue to increase that pace because they have a hard job to answer.
Yeah.
And I'd go and say, we all need this to happen. This isn't just an issue for black police officers. This is an issue for the whole country. Because why I'm proud of being British is that we are fair minded. My granddad always used to say this to me, they're a fair-minded bunch. We are fair-minded, and how the police operate and look is an important expression of that. That's why this report is important. That's why I hope the police get on top of it.
And I think the people that are very critical of the police should look around the world and see just how good our police force is. And I know that we will occasionally give them a hard time. We will get them on and sometimes say they've got things wrong and they've maybe had more problems in management than they have actually on the front line. But, you know, you look at other countries in Europe And you don't want to be having those kind of police forces like the one in France, the one in Spain. I mean, these people will crack heads at the beginning of any kind of demonstration and just get the batons out and start beating people up. America, people get shot every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, I know the George Floyd case was highlighted, but, you know, that goes on a lot in America. And it's not just black people who get shot. They shoot everyone, you know.
The thing about our police force, particularly the NPS, they are the most scrutinised police forces, services rather, in the world. Mm. That is a material fact. And largely they respond to that. And we have to tread that fine line of supporting them, but also being a critical friend. I think that's a really important, an important line to tread. Because what we don't want is to rob our police services of authority. Mm. We sometimes saw it in the riots where the police were nervous to go in because they knew they were going to get tried in the press and destroyed by certain politicians. So they stepped back. That makes everybody unsafe. Mm. We must say to ourselves, our police service sometimes have to wade in, and we should support them in that, but we also reserve the right to say, look, enough, or move in a different direction. And that's a problem we've had in London. That lack of leadership has left the police all at sea, and it affects morale and it affects safety.
And it must affect probably recruitment as well.
Yeah.
Sean, stay with us. We're going to take a short break here. Sean Bailey's here. He's going to be in this chair come early next week, Monday and Tuesday, early breakfast. It's going to be great to listen to. It's going to be a different perspective on the world, because that's what we do here at Talk Radio.
This is Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB+, and on the Talk Radio app. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio, also Talk Radio TV, of course. Sean Bailey's here. We've been enjoying chatting away about a great many things. Sean's in next week, in for James Max on the early breakfast from 5 o'clock. That'll be a bit of a struggle getting up that early, or are you one of these early risers?
I can get up. It's not a problem for me.
Really?
Yeah.
And what about the actual show? Because, I mean, you've been a guest on Talk Radio a lot. You're familiar with the media. I mean, when I came from newspapers when I first got into radio, and it took me quite a long time to feel like comfortable doing it. You know, now I feel absolutely, you know, happy to talk for hours and hours on end. But I mean, you're sort of natural, aren't you?
I hope so. And Monday we'll all find out.
Think so.
Monday we'll all find out,
no,
won't
but
we?
You know
we'll
what
see
I mean?
Monday.
Suddenly the light goes on and you go, you sort of sharp intake of breath. But you know, there's a great team here. You'll be very well looked after. So I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it too. And it's an opportunity to, you know me, I love to speak to people, love to hear their experiences. And I want to hear what's happening to people outside. So what you'll see with me, I'll constantly ask people to take me on, take on the government, take on their neighbours, whatever issue you have, we'll have it on early breakfast, and I'm happy to talk about it.
Well, it's interesting that you said about the green agenda, because, you know, up to a point, I think some people are with you on that, but other people are saying, well, I don't mind going more green as long as it doesn't cost me any money. You know, for example, when you get Allegra Stratton talking about things like, nobody's going to be making you change your boiler over in the next 10 years, but at some point in the future that will happen. That's fine, as long as it ain't going to cost me another 10 grand to get a new boiler and some new underfloor heating pads or something, you know?
But this is a challenge for people. If you're sat at home now and you're a dyed-in-the-wall greenie, you believe in it. I think where the green agenda, green people have failed, they haven't brought people along. And every time you hear the words green, you have a worry that it's going to cost you. And unless we can remove that, I don't think people will join in. It's going to be important because some of it will cost.
Mm.
But I think you have to demonstrate the benefits. And right just now, it's too much about how naughty we are. Mm. It's too much about we haven't invested enough.
Yes.
I think people need to talk about the benefits a bit.
And also, those who believe it and are all, you know, all over the social media this past week saying, oh, look at the floods. You know, that's all down to global warming. It's all down to climate change. Nobody really knows if that's true. And the problem is, I think the government haven't been very good at proving one thing is connected to the other.
The thing, the government is probably there in the problem set. I think it's not our job to prove that. I'd say this, though. We've had floods before.
Yeah.
We've had floods before. We've had all sorts before.
I mean, before they put the Thames barrier up, where I live, down in Rotherhithe, right, there's a pub there that's got a high watermark on the side of the bar because the street used to flood every single year when there was no Thames barrier to stop it happening.
And this is a challenge, isn't it? If you want to promote the green issues, I think you have to be mindful that you tell people the truth.
Mm.
You don't always look for the monster under the bed. Because I spoke to a guy who said to me, well, of course, we've had floods before. How comes that wasn't about global warming? And I tried to get into it with him, but I could kind of see his point. If you always say it's because of this, there's a certain section of people who simply won't believe you because you're not demonstrating the truth.
Right, exactly right. And you know, a lot of people, and I would say I'm probably one of them, would say, look, if you want me to buy an electric car, you've got to make them a bit cheaper. You know, ordinary people can't afford to spend £45,000 on a Tesla.
Listen, electric cars cars, I think, are going to be a big challenge. First off, they're way, way, way too expensive. Mm. Your average British person is not interested to spend that money.
Somebody told me the other day there's a Vauxhall, I think it's a Corsa, which you can buy a petrol version, 15 grand. The electric version is 25.
And more importantly, if you're like me and you have two children, you've going to have to buy a slightly bigger car, which makes it even bigger expense. So they haven't solved that. And of course, there's other deeper issues. The chemicals in the batteries are absolutely horrible.
Yeah, the mining that's being done in Africa is horrendous.
It's right. And of course, we've heard stories of slave labour, strip mining, all kinds of things. So I think sometimes we're sold this, you know, it's the big idea. But if you dig a little bit deeper, is it really?
Yeah.
And these are all the issues that people need to solve if they're going to get the bulk of people interested in the green agenda.
And I think one of the other things that I would like to see, and many people that talk to me on this show would like to see, is the kind of deconstruction of this kind of almost binary politics that we've got, that you're either, you know, pro-Brexit or you're against it, or you're pro-green or you're against it. You know, we need a bit more nuance, I think, don't we?
Listen, one of the reasons I'm desperate to do the breakfast show is because I believe that's who I am as a person. Mm. I've always been able to take on other people's views and agree to disagree or bargain. Mm. And the way we set up politics now, and I would say this, I think Labour MPs have been particularly guilty of this. You're in or you're out.
Yeah.
You're either the solution or the problem. Mm. But what that means is we can't solve big, complicated issues as a nation, which will destroy us. Mm. I believe in time we'll look back at this period of political and public discourse and say, wow, they lost their minds there. Mm. And the other thing as well, it leaves us open to interference by outside nations.
Yeah.
If you see what happened after the England football match with all the trading around racism and all the rest of that, a lot of that was written by people from outside of the conversation. And I literally mean from different nations as well, trying to cause instability here. Mm. And the reason it works is because we don't have the ability to have a nuanced conversation.
Right.
I think that's really important that we do that.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, I look forward to Monday morning. I can't promise to be with you at 5, but I'll promise to get up by 5:30.
You're going to miss out. Anybody who's 5:30. Anybody who isn't there is going to be missing out on London's best conversation. In fact, the country's best conversation.
Well, they call it the world's best conversation.
There
Sean Bailey's going to be here 5 o'clock on Monday morning and Tuesday morning. It's going to be a great show. I'm going to be listening to it and watching it, in fact, on talkradio.tv, because it's the only place to be. The home of common sense, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It's 12:49. It's Friday. And it's time for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
We've got some lights now as well.
We have. We've got lights in the studio.
Strobe lights in the studio. It's all happening. Well, we missed it last week because you weren't here.
I know.
What happened last week?
Well, I've got a boat to deal with now, Mike.
See, this is what's going to happen now. This boat is going to take over your life, isn't it?
It really is. It's already starting to cause a few problems.
Where is it now?
I don't really want to say.
Okay.
No, it's Cassiopeia.
Well, you don't
have
to give me the absolute location.
I've done it now. I've dropped a pin.
Oops.
There we go.
Well, it's not like somebody's going to nick it, are they?
I don't know.
You're not going to make a fast getaway in a canal boat, are you?
No, 2.5 miles an hour.
You can walk quicker.
Yeah, you can.
You know.
Yeah, you can.
Anyway, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. This is the Perrier Awards, where we look back on the so-called Independent Republic of Mike Graham and choose our favourite moments.
Why have you got everybody's picture, by the way, on that new backdrop? Some communist regime you've got now. Everybody gets equal credit.
It's nice to get the rest of the team in.
I was not consulted, I just want to say that. And neither was I consulted about the Grimace with Graham thing either.
No.
Starting to get a bit annoyed about all this.
Oh dear. Well, maybe we're trying to tell you something, Mike.
Maybe.
So, following tradition, the first Perry Awards goes to you
for the
exaggeration of the week.
It makes sense for Tesco's to offer a thousand. I think I'd go and get a job there if they were going to give £1 million.
Honestly,
sign-on bonus.
Where can we sign
up? Exactly.
Wow. Mm. It would. I mean, imagine £1 million.
I know.
Quite
handy for the weekend.
It would be. So the next award goes to yourself as well for the pronunciation of the week.
For people travelling from the EU. EU, Jimmy, as I used to say. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. So it's a case of tongue too big for mouth.
Well, you know, you got out eventually.
I did.
Political extraordinaire Peter Cardwell stood in for James Max on the Early Breakfast Show last weekend. There was an obscure noise he heard when talking to a caller. This is a visual perio for the sound effect of the week.
And Nikki was making a very serious point, and I was listening to her, but there was a cow that mooed in the background. So I'm afraid I was struggling not to laugh when the cow went moo.
Very good moo, that.
Yeah.
Well,
do you
done.
Want to try?
I do a good moo. My kids have always enjoyed it. They're a bit old for it now, though.
Oh, really?
Well, we do that thing, you know. I don't know if you don't, if you do know to do this thing because you haven't got kids, but, you know, if we're driving past.
You don't
it,
know, I've not.
Well, I don't. Well, you didn't. You've never told me you have. Tied up in the boat currently. You drive past a field of cows and you just start mooing.
Yeah.
You go, and everybody, the dog likes it as well.
Oh,
he's quite keen.
Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, he likes it.
Oh, bless him. Mm. Well, you'll have to, when we go on tour, if we get to go on tour at some point, you'll have to show us your mooing skills.
I will,
Mike,
be more than happy. Yeah. Oh. I do other animal noises as well.
Oh, can you do a chicken?
Yeah, absolutely.
What else do we want? Dog bark?
Well, you don't want to do them all at once.
Oh, right,
tease
okay.
Tease it out. Yeah, for that, goodness sake.
That's true.
Keep the suspense.
that's true. So, drive time... get my words mixed up now. Drive time presenter Patrick Chrissies gets a Perrier for the one liner of the week.
Also, a quarter of Britons haven't been hugged for more than a year. Ah, diddums.
Oh, I know.
I hate hugging.
Do you?
Yeah.
I was going to offer to give you one.
What happened? Do you want to rephrase that?
Yeah, it's a hug he's looking for, Christie's, for God's sake. Shocking, that, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
I can attest to the fact that Kevin O'Sullivan is one of the grumpiest people I've ever known.
But you love him for
it. Of course. Absolutely.
Yes. I think he's inside. He's a teddy bear.
Oh, he's a very nice man.
He is.
Absolutely. Ask his wife.
So over to 1-4, where Ian Collins gets a visual Perrier for knocking the mic.
Amazing. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, this same discussion is...
Never fails to amuse that, does it? I mean, I do it myself, so I can't throw any stones, but hey.
Do you just misjudge how far the mic is away?
No, I think
away,
sometimes
or...
you're not thinking, you know, you're not expecting to hit it, you know. And, you know, if I wave my arms about a bit, sometimes you can do it, you know.
Well, it's a good job it doesn't swing one way.
Yes, I know. Absolutely right.
Oh, gosh. So back to the Independent Republic for the Thursday Club. Mm. Now, sorry to tell you, Mike, we have a new star of the show.
Oh, yes.
In the form of a four-legged friend. So this is the visual Perrier for the pantomime act of the week.
This is lovely.
It's really nice.
I could drink a whole bottle of that.
It's from the south of the
You're not going to believe this, but the cat is behind you now.
What? Oh, my... I missed it.
The cat was...
See, now you're just messing with my head, aren't you? I still haven't... I mean, I've seen it now. Now I've seen it.
But you need to see it in the flesh.
I need to see it live in order to believe it.
Right, okay.
So I'll have to check on Thursday.
Oh, well, yes.
Because, I mean, somebody could have just put that on there.
They could have,
I mean, there's some very clever people here in the video department.
Do you think we're playing tricks with
you? Well, I'm slightly concerned. You're trying to drive me insane. Okay. You know.
Well, maybe. this is the wrong namer of the week. Well done, Mike.
Thank you. Statistics with Jamie Jackson. Remember, right here, it's the only place to find out. Jamie Jenkins, I should say. Yeah. This is the only place. That's right. There is a Jamie Jackson. I used to talk to him as well. That's why
I got confused.
Yeah, he writes for The Guardian, actually.
Okay.
He used to be their Manchester football correspondent. Oh. I think he still is.
Okay.
I've had him on the show, actually.
Recently.
Nice bloke.
Not recently.
Not that recently. He wrote a novel we had him on.
Okay. Mm. Well, maybe we should reach out to him
at
some point.
Okay.
Jamie Jackson, if you're listening.
There you go.
There we go. So Patrick Chrissies gets a Perrier Award for the wrong timing of the week.
Helping me.
Right.
I'm midway to a barbecue at the moment.
All right.
I'm master chef, so you've caught me a little bit on the oof.
On the oof?
On the oof, yeah.
Is that something you cook at a barbecue? On the oof?
Well, I wouldn't know, seeing as though the accent's going in 50 years.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh,
you were disappointed we didn't do that
story,
weren't
you? I was gutted, yes.
Well, never mind. We'll have another go at it, maybe.
We will do, we will. And finally, we have a last-minute entry.
Last-minute entry, yes.
Charlotte Fisher, the fabulous newsreader who's pretty much sat outside.
Well done, Charlotte.
Makes herself into the Perrier Awards. I think this is the first time ever, so well done, Charlotte.
Looking at the weather, Storm Everts will bring very unsettled weather showers.
It's always a good one, that, isn't it?
It is always a good one.
So we've got to look out for that later.
Yes,
that sort of weather can be quite problematic.
Absolutely. Bring your rain, Max.
Problematic. Even.
Problematic. Yeah. That is all for the Perry Awards. There will be more.
With the windscreen wipers. Sorry.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah. Bring your jet wash, everybody.
Exactly.
That's all for the Perry Awards. There'll be more next week.
Well done.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio.
Radio, across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham, on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 till 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.